coming up on New York Now.
People now believe us. It's really something special.
An emotional day in Albany as the Child Victims Act passes.
I was 13 years old, and it was a teacher. And I can still smell him. I can still smell what he smells like.
And new gun control laws come to New York.
No one wants to take guns from legal owners who are mentally healthy.
It's next on New York Now, right here on PBS.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET. Additional funding provided by the Leo Cox Beach Philanthropic Foundation. Winner of a New York State Emmy for Best Political Program. This is New York Now.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to New York Now. I'm Matt Ryan.
And I'm Casey Seiler from the Times Union. The passage of significant legislation winds down, clearing the way for budget season.
It was another big news week in Albany.
It is a day where finally we say to the victims that we hear you. We are responding in the most responsible way possible. And we are really, really sorry it took so long. We really are.
Less than a month after taking the majority, the state Senate passed another piece of legislation that had never made it to the floor of the chamber, the Child Victims Act. The bill extends the statutes of limitations for child sexual abuse offenses by 5 years, giving survivors until age 28 to press charges for felonies and age 25 for misdemeanors. It also extends the statute of limitations in civil actions to allow survivors to bring suits until they reach the age of 55. In addition, it creates a one-year look-back window for civil claims and permits them against both public and private institutions.
I feel over the moon. I feel vindicated. My family has written to me to say, see, your early days when you were maligned and harassed and retaliated against, those days are over. People now believe us. It's really something special.
I would tell anyone that's fighting for something that's right. If it's right and it's just, don't give up. Because the more that you stand and speak, it will allow others to stand and speak. And for this bill in particular, you know, it's not just about, you know, survivors having justice, but it's also about the fact that when we stand up and speak, we are creating laws that will protect children. And that's really what this is about. It's about children and making them safer.
The governor joined survivors and advocates in the Red Room Monday morning. Much like his father encountered, specifically in 1984 with his pro-choice stance, Cuomo, a former altar boy, has found himself at odds with the Catholic Church this session between the recently passed Reproductive Health Act and now the Child Victims Act, which the church was against until this year.
To the Catholic Church, I'm sorry about the situation. I'm not sorry about my position. I'm sorry they have taken the position they have taken. I'm a Roman Catholic. I had Catholic elementary school, Catholic high school, Jesuits in college. So it is a difficult situation. And as we were chatting, my father found himself in the same situation. But on this issue, I'll tell you the truth. I don't think I'm against the Catholic Church. I think the bishops may have a different position than the Pope, and I'm with the Pope. I quoted him at the State of the State, and Pope Francis could not be any clearer in his statement. I mean, he totally condemned the action, and I associate myself with Pope Francis on this issue.
Speaking about the bill Monday, four legislators, all women, shared their stories, some for the first time, of sexual abuse, including Assemblywoman Lou Lean New of Manhattan.
I was 13 years old, and it was a teacher. And I can still smell him. I can still smell what he smells like. And I told people in my conference last year when we were about to speak on the bill about my experience. But I think, you know, it's not something that I like to bring up because it's something that's so shameful and so horrible and so traumatic of an experience to me, to many of the other victims, that it's really, really hard to bring up. It's really hard to talk about it for many, many reasons. I hope that, you know, people realize that this is not an attack on any institution. This is not an attack on anybody else. This is to protect victims. It's to protect children. And it's also to help to make somebody feel a little bit more whole again. Because in reality, the only reason why I even spoke up again about this for me is because I found out that the person who preyed on me took advantage of another girl. And that is why we want to make sure that people can speak up. Because a lot of times, people don't realize that it matters. That it matters to people, your story. It matters to people that there's a list of names, that we're not alone, that it's not something that the law doesn't care about, that our government doesn't care about, that our friends and colleagues here doesn't care about. And the reason why I chose to speak on the bill is because instead of just explaining my vote, I hope to turn a few of your votes. I hope that I convince some of you that maybe this is the right thing to do to make sure that more and more we have awareness that we need to protect our children and that we need to make sure that we're listening. We're listening to all of the names, we're listening to all of the voices that are crying out to make sure that we're protected. There's not a single day that this doesn't affect me. There's not a single time where I've dated somebody and it's been normal. There's not a single time where my relationships with people are not affected. I never speak on this bill for this reason, because I literally can't stop shaking. And so I just wanted to let you guys know that your vote is so important to me and so important to those victims. Thank you so much.
The bill passed 130-3 in the Assembly and in the Senate, where it had been blocked for years. All 63 legislators voted aye.
The majority leader mentioned respect the Second Amendment. I personally don't agree with it, but I respect it. I just sometimes compare this country with other industrialized nations that don't have guns, and the amount of murders by gunplay, it pales in comparison to what we have here. But it is the law of the land, but we need to make sure that the people who do have guns have them in a safe way and a responsible way.
The next day, new gun control measures were passed. They include extending the waiting period for background checks for gun purchasers for up to 30 days, banning the sale and possession of bump stocks, which are already illegal to use in New York, a provision that prohibits teachers from being asked by school administrators to bring guns to school for student safety purposes, and a red flag bill that allows law enforcement, family members, and school officials to seek a court order requiring a person to relinquish any firearms in their possession if they are likely to harm themselves or others.
It is common sense. Now, you'll see the political extremes rise up. Same argument for the past 25 years. Oh, it's another restriction. It's another slippery slope. They won't be happy until they take my gun. No one wants to take guns from legal owners who are mentally healthy. We don't want people who are mentally ill or past felons to have guns. That's all this is. And any reasonable American who looks at what's going on in this country, I believe, agrees with that.
The governor was joined by advocates, including Linda Beagle Schulman, whose son Scott, a teacher, was killed in the Parkland, Florida high school massacre last year.
Governor Cuomo, your support and your humanity, which is beyond compare, believing what's right and getting it done and not letting anyone stand in your way, you have my thanks, you have my heart. I know that no matter how senseless and no matter how incomprehensible the Parkland massacre was, Scott's murder was, when we passed the red flag law, thanks to you and the legislature, but so thanks to you, Scott's murder will now save lives.
And finally, they've been overshadowed by the big pieces of legislation that have passed recently, but budget hearings are underway in Albany. Transportation was featured Wednesday with many lawmakers speaking critically about the MTA.
Now, I've been fortunate enough to do a fair amount of traveling, and I can say with a high level of confidence that the MTA is the dirtiest, least reliable, slowest, and most expensive mass transit system in the industrialized world.
Newly elected Queens Senator John Liu asked MTA leaders about the revenue estimates for a proposed congestion pricing plan that would charge motorists a fee entering Manhattan south of 60th Street.
With regard to the congestion pricing plan itself, there's been no detail about how much more our constituents are going to have to pay.
Correct.
Right? And that's, I got to imagine, that's by design, because you must have costed something out already. What's the expected annual revenues from congestion pricing?
The estimates that we've seen, and again, this is a net number, and that's the target.
Net number, what is it, 800,
we're
a billion?
We're expecting $1 billion, that's the expectation. Because the $1 billion, if we receive it on an annual basis, should be able to support $15 billion.
Okay, so how do you get to the $1 billion? How do you get to the $1 billion? How many people are going to be paying these tolls, and what are the tolls going to be?
Those analyses are still being done.
So you're going to keep everybody in the dark, and you want us to vote on a plan that where we're not even sure which part of the capital plan we're going to be funding through congestion pricing, and you're not willing to tell us how much the tolls are going to be.
Budget hearings continue for the next 2 weeks. Time now for our New York Now poll question. Do you support the new gun control measures passed by the state legislature? Let us know at nynow.org. Last week, we asked if you supported the DREAM Act, and 58% said yes. Lauren from Pittsburgh, watching on WXXI, told us it is long past time that these young immigrants brought here as children be granted the path to citizenship. Steve in Albany County voted no and simply said, Americans first. And finally, Linda in Western New York, watching on WNED, said it is the fair, right, and just thing to do for these exceptional young people. As always, we thank you for letting us know what you think. To vote again, just head to nynow.org. It's where you can find hundreds of past episodes and links to us on social media, including Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, where our handle is at nynow_PBS. There's also a link to the Capital Confidential blog highlighting stories from reporters Brendan Lyons, Rachel Silberstein, Chris Bragg, and Dave Lombardo. It can also be found at timesunion.com. And that'll do it for me. My partner from the Times Union, Casey Seiler, takes you the rest of the way. He is at our Reporters Roundtable.
All right, and now for more analysis of the week's news, I'm happy to be joined at the Reporters Roundtable by Mike Gormley of Newsday and Ken Lovett of the Daily News. Okay. Let's start with the Child Victims Act, a ostensibly controversial bill that had been bottled up for years by Senate Republicans, and it passes 63-0.
Amazing.
What are we to make of that?
Amazing. Well, it shows that, first of all, the Republicans and what the Democrats have always said, if it comes to the floor, it's going to pass because no one wants to be on record as voting against child sex abuse victims. And the Catholic Church gave the Republicans an out as well by a few days before the vote, dropping their opposition. That didn't mean they supported it, but they dropped their opposition. So the Republicans did not have to choose between, you know, angering the public and angering the church.
There was an awful lot going on behind the scenes on this. This is one of the dangers of these closed-door negotiations on bills. The bill, there were a few different versions last year. The Catholic Church was opposed because, and the end of the breaking the logjam here, the Governor Cuomo, in his State of the State address, his budget address, removed about 10 words. The Catholic Church said that those 10 words basically shielded public schools and governments from any kind of lawsuits for hiding this, for covering this stuff up. When I was talking to, it looked like the Catholic Church had a point here, because it was, they're saying once these cases were in court, they wouldn't be able to proceed. So the answer from the governor's office and the legislators was this was just redundant, it wasn't necessary. So then the question was, well, if it's redundant and unnecessary, why not put it back in? Eventually they decided to do that.
But it is a little insincere, and the governor's office pointed out, but they're right in this case. They did have that language in there last year,
right?
And the Catholic Church opposed it. What changed? The Republicans were in charge of the Senate last year and weren't going to pass it. This year they knew it was a foregone conclusion, so they at least wanted to try and tailor it in a way they would like the church, but they knew there was nothing they can do to stop it. And it really did lead between that and the abortion law, the RHA, Reproductive Health Act. It led to a lot of back and forth between the governor and specifically Cardinal Dolan.
It's appropriate that, Ken, we're having you on this week to discuss the Child Victims Act, because, of course, the Daily News has really worked hard, you specifically, to bring a lot of these issues into focus over the course of the last couple of years. Senator Lanza argued, well, this is a new bill. This isn't a bill that had come before us before, because we couldn't have passed it because the Assembly wouldn't have gone for it. I don't remember the Republican-controlled Senate being shy about passing one-house bills over the course of the last couple of years.
No, and really, it's not that new a bill. The biggest change was it went from 50 years to 55 years in terms of right now, under the current law, if you were abused as a child in a private institution, you had till your 23rd birthday to bring a civil lawsuit. This will raise it to your 55th birthday. The only difference from last year's bill was it was the 50th birthday, so it went up a little. And you know, they were saying, oh, it's not strong enough during the debate, and you should do a few other things. And the Democrats are like, are you kidding? You had all these years to be able to craft a bill, but you wouldn't even bring one to the floor. And so it seemed a little bit insincere on their part to all of a sudden say it's not strong enough.
We mentioned the pushback from the Catholic Church saying that this session is off to a particularly anti-Catholic note, they say. That there, others have claimed that there has been too much kind of ball spiking over the passage of the Reproductive Health Amendment. Is this going to prove problematic for specifically Governor Cuomo, who some people have even called for his excommunication?
Yeah, right. But, you know, Catholics who are in government face this all the time. His father faced the same thing. The Catholic Church has had a tough time here. Whether there's going to be a backlash for Governor Cuomo, I would doubt it, because these are very popular positions, very popular bills. I would just say, out of fairness, the Catholic Church did have a point. If they were right about this clause that they finally got the governor's office to put back into the bill, if the Catholic Church was right, then the vast majority of child sexual abuse cases, which are in public schools, after families and acquaintances, there's more in public schools than there are in private schools. If the Catholic Church may have been right on that, this could have really gutted the bill, and then they brought it back at the end.
It was a loss, though. They fought this for 13 years, 14 years.
Expensive as well.
Expensive. They like I said, basically virtually the same bill they opposed last year until the Democrats won control. So they lost that. They lost the Reproductive Health Act, which, again, they did feel the governor was spiking the ball. What really set them off especially was when he had public buildings turned red or pink to celebrate the passage. And they're like, you're celebrating abortion? And then they also lost, although they weren't as strongly opposed, but they were opposed on GENDA, which provided anti-discrimination protections for transgender New Yorkers. So for the church, the first month was not a good one.
Yeah, you actually heard that, in fact, from some lawmakers who voted for it, that the lighting up of the Freedom Tower was inappropriate. John McDonald from here in the Capital Region voted for it, and he expressed that in a blog post.
It wasn't just conservatives. It wasn't just the church and conservatives. There was a lot of people who thought that was a big problem.
The other big slate of legislation that was passed this week was, of course, gun control. I think it's fair to say probably the most significant gun control legislation passed in the Capitol since the SAFE Act in 2013. Including the red flag measure and a bill banning teachers from packing on school campuses.
Well, I think what's fascinating about this bill was this is the first, as you note, the first major gun legislation since the SAFE Act, what, 6-7 years ago.
Yeah.
Not a lot of reaction to this compared to what happened with the SAFE Act. This was actually a much more well thought out bill. I think that you found widespread support for this sort of thing because it really did go towards the one element that gun owners, gun rights, or gun owner rights advocates said was that they're concerned about the government taking away weapons. This actually would do that, but it would, there's a due process, and only for those who are deemed by a judge independently with physician's input to be a threat to themselves or others. So this is a very well thought out bill. There's a lot of criticism of the SAFE Act that saying that it wasn't thought out, that it was a reaction to Sandy Hook to try to be the first in the country. This is a good package of bills.
The one thing, and they really didn't have an answer for it, so one of the bills was banning teachers from carrying guns in school. Obviously, since Parkland, President Trump and the NRA have said that's one possible solution. And I think there's 466 districts across the country that have agreed to do that. New York went the other way. They banned it. But then you ask them, well, okay, you're banning the teachers from having guns, which seems okay. You don't want spectrometers, people going through metal detectors. And a lot of legislators are opposed to having armed security within the schools. So then what do you do to, you know, thwart a potential mass shooting at a school? And that they didn't have an answer for, other than you hope law enforcement gets there soon enough and deals with it.
So we've had this incredible January, the most, you know, the biggest January in terms of passage of significant legislation that I've seen in the 10 years since I've started covering the Capitol. What's next? You know, we now turn our attention to the budget process. We've already started some of the joint legislative hearings. Is how smoothly will the course of this budget negotiation run?
Well, I would just back up for a second. And no legislation is easy to pass. That's right. Given. But having said that, this is really low-hanging fruit. These were measures that the Democrats in the Assembly and the Senate had been discussing, debating, drawing up, researching. They've been ready for this for years. So these went fast, and I don't want to minimize it, but yeah. It was not a difficult chore to get a lot of this done. Now we're facing the difficult stuff. Single-payer health care, if that ever happens. Remember, the concern there is even Governor Cuomo says that kind of universal health care is just too expensive for the state, billions and billions of dollars. Marijuana, legalizing marijuana is a concern, partly because you see the medical community coming out and saying, whoa, don't do this. You're not ready for it, and it's not a good idea.
And the Assembly Speaker, Carl Hastie, on Thursday said everyone just kind of assumed that the medical marijuana, because the Democrats all are for it, the governor's on board with it, everyone assumed that would be part of the budget. And the Assembly Speaker said, whoa, you know, there's a good chance we will not get this done in the next 6 weeks because the budget's due by April 1st. And he says there's a lot of negotiating we have to do on that. And he doesn't think it'll be part of the budget. He's also, and the Senate leader, Andre Stewart-Cousins, they've been looking to kind of decouple policy from the budget. So it wouldn't be surprising if that's another reason they don't want to do pot as part of the budget, because they feel that when you had a Republican Senate, it made more sense for the governor to put policy in because it gave you a more leverage to get certain things the Republicans didn't want to do done. But now with the Democrats on board, at least philosophically, with a lot of the same issues, they feel that why not just do them outside the budget?
Well, I'd put a little finer point on that. It gave the governor a lot of leverage.
Yeah.
Not necessarily legislators.
No, it did, the speaker, because one of the reasons the speaker did not go after the governor as hard as he has been this year was because he felt that he needed the governor to get things, some of the assembly priorities done through the Senate, you know, because it wouldn't. Now he has a partner with the Senate that he feels we can get this stuff done whether the governor's really on board or not. And if there's a veto, which we haven't seen yet, if there is a veto, will there be an override effort? Because we have not seen that in the first two terms.
We also want to note that this week brought the return of John Flanagan of Long Island, the Senate GOP leader, after he took some time off to deal with a relapse of his alcohol problem.
Yeah, he looked great. He was doing his usual 100-mile-an-hour walk through the Capitol. Seemed in control of what was going on. He must have kept abreast of what was going on in the Senate. It'll be a good addition for the Senate Republicans in the minority now, because although they've got a lot of leaders that have been around for a long time, John Flanagan knows how to pull everyone together. So it could be, it's very good for that, for to give that other perspective into legislation.
The irony to a lot of people, though, was his return to the Capitol. The first vote they took was the Child Victims Act, which he helped block for the last couple of years, and he voted for it.
And finally, what would a week be without the governor pouring cold water on the idea of a presidential run by Mayor Bill de Blasio?
Yeah, he was on radio and he was asked about it, and he kind of make a he made a staticky noise because he was on the phone, and he was like, "Can't hear you, sorry." and then he basically just said he hasn't announced. If he ever does, I'll decide then. But yeah,
the governor doesn't want Bill de Blasio to be mayor, let alone president.
All right. Yeah. On that note, we're going to have to leave it. So thanks very much to Mike Gormley of Newsday and Ken Lovett of the Daily News. All right, well, that's all the time we have for this week. We leave you with footage from the interior of the state capitol because the exterior of the state capitol was freezing this week. Thanks for watching. For everybody here at New York Now, we'll see you next week.